This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The International Olympic Committee is looking to introduce video games into the Olympics. If they decide to do this, video games will be in the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo. Geek culture expert and writer and machinima Ray Carcello is going to join me to break down these latest developments, pop culture news, and upcoming games. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
No, thanks for having me on again, Mason. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. You know, I wanted to get your take on esports going to the Olympics. Do you think this is really going to happen?
You know, I do think it'll happen. I think that with video games, I mean, there's a competitive aspect, obviously. The rules are pretty established. I think the interesting thing will be see what video games are actually part of the Olympics. I think fighting games lend themselves more to the Olympics than, say, shooters do. Obviously, those are more team-based, but also I think they're more violent. And typically, I think that, you know, we've had boxing, wrestling, things like that are typically part of the Olympics. So I wouldn't be surprised if fighting games are actually there, because I think they test your reflexes, they test your mental fortitude. And if sports like golf can be part of the Olympics, I think that video games are probably just as strenuous, at least on a mental level. And I think that, therefore, I'm excited for the video games to potentially be part of the Olympics. I think it makes a lot of sense. And considering how much they are permeating our lives and the world and our culture, I think that it's, with esports rising and being the, competition of the future, I think it's actually very smart for the Olympic Committee to get on board with this.
I know you said fighting games, but they're going to have to narrow it down a little bit. What kind of fighting games? You know, there's Dragon Ball Z and the fighters, and then there's, Street Fighter, BlazBlue. I mean, there's so many fighting games out there. Do you think these video game developers are going to sit there and have a bidding war? Like, hey, I want my game in the Olympics.
Well, I think that's definitely going to be one of the most interesting things. I wouldn't be surprised if the Olympic Committee looks at things like Evo and other major fighting game tournament events and looks from there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the IOC, of course, is not the most up-and-up organization, from what I understand. So I wouldn't be surprised if certain developers try to sway them in certain ways to try and make sure their games make it. But I think for at least if this first time go around, I think they'll look at the big games that are on the competitive level. I think they'll look at things like you said, like Street Fighter, look at like Injustice 2, look at anything that's going on at Evo, Smash Brothers, and I think those will be at the forefront and have the best likelihood of getting put forward onto a large competitive stage like the Olympics.
It's funny you're talking about how things are in the forefront. And right now, Fortnite's up there. You don't think Fortnite would have a spot or a chance to be part of the Olympic sports?
No, because I think most Olympic sports have, I don't think the 1 versus 100 aspect actually works well for the Olympics in a lot of regards. I think if they were able to do a specialty mode where they narrowed it down, where they had heats or whatnot, where it was maybe like, 10 people per match on a smaller Olympic special arena, I think that could work. But because you're having all the countries in the world participating in the Olympics, because you have, you don't want to have it. All right, here it is. We have 100 countries. Each one person from each country, it's going to be one match of Fortnite, and here's your gold medal. The Olympics like to draw things out. They like to have things go on, they want tournament-style things. They want things that can take time. So as popular as Fortnite is, I don't think Fortnite's format lends itself to an Olympic format.
I'm still on the fence with Fortnite. I'm not sure if I should be excited for it or not. Have you played it yet?
I've played Fortnite. I mean, it's a very fun and interesting game. The 1 versus 100 Battle Royale is not obviously something that's original to Fortnite. It's been around for a long time. And obviously a lot of people are aping it. You got Call of Duty and Battlefield that will have their own respective modes coming later this year. But, I mean, it's a fun game. It's well put together. It's bright. It's colorful. I mean, it's got obviously a very strong competitive aspect. I understand why it's popular. I'm a little amazed at how popular it's become, but I completely understand. It's a well-made game. Epic's done a fantastic job in terms of balancing it, constantly tweaking it, being very forthcoming with their fans, adding new modes, adding variations, and, of course, adding tons of new content that people can, if they so choose, spend money on for microtransactions.
Now, do you think that the Fortnite bubble would pop? Because this morning I was reading how parents are buying coaches for their kids. And that's, to me, seems a bit much. But is this game popular enough for this to work?
I mean, I think that's a little bit much that you're having parents buying video game tutors for their kids for this game. I mean, look, I think that's tough for anything in popular culture. I think for any game, really, to stand the test of time. I think Fortnite will always be strong. I think Fortnite will continue to have a base, will continue to have some sort of fan base. But I don't know if it's ever going, I don't think if it can maintain this status ongoing for the next decade, we'll say. You know, I think that it's a bit much for people to be putting so much into it. But I think also, people see that there's a lot of money on the line. Epic has said they're going to do tens of millions of dollars worth of esports tournaments for this. And I think that people are trying to cash in on it while they can, while they're getting good. But I don't think that this is going to be a long-term thing to where, like, a 15-year-old is going to be playing Fortnite for 15 years. Now, of course, I could be wrong. There are always exceptions to the rule. You look at Counter-Strike. Obviously, Counter-Strike got updated with Counter-Strike Go, and that was very popular for a very long time. And there are some games that can stand the test of time, but even Counter-Strike and Counter-Strike Go, it retracted, right? I mean, Counter-Strike is not as popular now as it was when I was, you know, playing it in high school and whatnot. You know, it's still very popular, but you're going to see people will fall off. The hardcore will stay around. It will have a strong fan base, but I do not think it can maintain its level of popularity more than, I would say, 5 years. I think, honestly, we've got another generation cycle, and I think Fortnite will, that you'll start to see some contraction, and you'll see something else come in and take all the air out of its sails, because that's what happens. That's how it works with video games, is that something bigger, better, and more fun comes along.
Now, you know, Ray, I'm a sucker for anything streaming, anything online. Machinima came out with some stuff, and I noticed you guys have Transformers, Power of the Primes, and Megatron is the leader of the Transformers. Is that true, or did I get that wrong?
No, yeah, Megatron in this version of Transformers, he's actually the reluctant leader of the Transformers here, because they go back to Cybertron, and it's a crazy series that, you know, basically for the sake of survival, as the Autobots and traditional Decepticons have to kind of team up to overcome this new threat, and Optimus isn't around, so Megatron, you know, I won't say Megatron softened, he's still Megatron, but he understands that for the greater good, that he must, for the greater good and for everyone, they all have to kind of band together. So
I actually like that, because I always felt that with Megatron, he was always willing to do the right thing, but his way.
And that's very much what it is that Megatron, I think Megatron is happy here because he's like, I am the leader. Everyone accepts this, and we're going to survive, and we're going to win, and we're going to do things my way. And people have fallen in line. Some of them have more hesitant than others, but they've done that. And yeah, Megatron's doing his thing. And he's kind of an anti-hero in this, which is very, very interesting.
Now, I've been asking a lot of people about this, and I have to know your opinion. What do you think of the upcoming Joker movies that are supposed to have Joaquin Phoenix as one of the Jokers, and then who is it, Jared Leto as a Joker for another Joker movie? What do you think of this?
You know, I worry that, to kind of keep it on the video game thing, I'm worried what's going to happen is what happened with Assassin's Creed Rogue and Assassin's Creed Unity. Those were two Assassin's Creed games during the last console generation, or the transition between console cycles, where they came out at the exact same time. And some people gravitated towards one, and some people gravitated towards the other. And because of that, well, also because Unity had a lot of issues, neither one of those games did as well as they could have. And my concern with putting two Joker movies out at the same time, so close together, is that you're going to split the audience. You're going to have the people who like Jared Leto's Joker, and they're going to go watch that. Or you have people who didn't like Jared Leto's Joker, and they're going to go watch the Joaquin Phoenix one. But I worry that you're going to split the audience, and what ends up happening is that you have two Joker movies, both of which can be very good. I don't know. I'm going to reserve judgment, but you have two Joker movies, and I think that, you know, people might only want to watch one. You have to be careful that you don't water down your key franchises or your key characters, and I think that's a valid concern that some folks might have. I mean, of course, I'm going to go watch both, but that's me. I'm weird. What are you going to do?
I'm the same way. I think I'll watch both too, but I can't help but think that maybe with Jared Leto, they're just trying to make it good, because he was very upset that his Joker scenes in Suicide Squad wasn't enough. So I wonder if this is their way of saying, hey, we'll make a movie all about you. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I'll see it anyways, right?
You gotta remember, the Suicide Squad movie wasn't about him. It wasn't about the Joker. It was about Harley. It was about Deadshot. It was about that, you know, Killer Croc. It was about all those folks, all those villains coming together to stop a bigger threat, you know, because like it is in the comics. I mean, the fact that they even put the Joker in that movie was a bit of a surprise to me personally, but I understand that they were trying to, of course, harp on the Joker-Harley relationship, and then, of course, set up Harley as a solo character potentially later on. So, I mean, I understand why they did it. Suicide Squad wasn't about the Joker. So, you know, if they want to make Jared Leto happy, hopefully, you know, this will do it, and hopefully they deliver a solid script and a solid performance. I mean, Jared Leto is a great actor. Of course, Jack Nicholson will always be my Joker, but Jared Leto did a take, and that's his take, and we'll, you know, hopefully a longer and 90-minute experience of it will do the character more justice than, obviously, like you mentioned, the 3 or 4 scenes that he had in Suicide Squad.
Now, staying on the DC topic, I wanted to know, what did you think of people's reactions to the Titan trailer? There was a few negative reactions, especially towards Robin. What do you think of this?
Well, I think that people are overreacting. I think that there was definitely a knee-jerk reaction. I do understand it. I think that the scene where it looked like he was stomping on people and cutting their throats, I think was a bit much, and it's definitely not the Robin most of us grew up with. I definitely also think that saying F Batman, I understand where it's coming from, because if you remember when Robin first left Batman to go do the Teen Titans and, of course, evolve into the character Nightwing, him and Batman were on very, very bad terms when that happened. So, I mean, I think that it's an interesting choice to basically take all that angst and anger and bad feelings towards one another and kind of just boil it down to that 2-second soundbite. And I think that's also the problem that sometimes you get with trailers is that, you know, when you're trying to put together a sizzle reel, something to kind of sell a show or a movie, and sometimes you put things in there that out of context don't do the product as much justice as it possibly can. So I'm hoping that once we finally do see Titan, when the DC Universe app launches, that, you know, once those scenes are in context, they'll make more sense. I mean, and of course, there's also the chance that, I mean, we saw, there's a very good chance that Raven could be messing with Robin's head, much like she did in DC Comics Presents number 26 back in 1980, leading up to the new Teen Titans number 1 by Marv Wolfman. You know, there's a chance that she could be showing, you know, ways that Robin could go, or things that could happen if Robin doesn't follow, you know, get the team together. I mean, it could all be a ruse. I don't know. I haven't seen the show yet, but I think it's an interesting thought. And I think that, unfortunately, that I think people are having knee-jerk reactions because people just see dark and they see gritty and they see something and that they haven't really responded well to in the past from DC. And I think they're afraid that this is going to be more of the same. But you have to give it a shot. I have to give it a shot, I think, because, again, it could all be out of context. We could get an explanation that suddenly makes us think that this is a great thing. But time will tell, you know?
Absolutely. I'll be honest, I was one of the people who had that knee-jerk reaction because that F Batman, I thought to myself, that's more Jason Todd than anything, you know? That's especially that gritty kind of outlook of stuff. I may give it a shot just because I like Teen Titans a lot, and I really am a fan of anything when it comes to DC.
That's the thing about Dick Grayson, is that Dick Grayson, depending on who's writing him and who's doing him, Dick Grayson can be just as gritty and just as dark, but he can also be very lighthearted and very playful. So it's an interesting take on the character. Depends, but I agree. Typically, when you think of, if you look at Jason and you look at Tim Drake, it's really as if you split Dick Grayson into two. Jason Todd is the dark side of Dick Grayson. Tim Drake is the light side. So I think that you got to give it a chance. It might not be a great adaptation of the Titans. It might be the best adaptation of the Titans. I don't know yet.
Well, I'm hoping it's the best, because anything live action, I think it just helps comic books out, you know?
For sure. I think it's a great thing that they're doing this as a live action form. I think, you know, obviously we've had plenty of great Teen Titan cartoons over the years, and of course, numerous volumes of fantastic comics, but think to do a live action series. I'm curious to see where they go. I'm curious to see how the characters develop. I think Raven looks great. I can't wait to see Beast Boy in action, just how much they let him transform. Curious to see Starfire in action. Curious if how many people they're going to add to the roster, if there's going to be like a Wonder Girl, if we're going to get a Hawk. I mean, I think we get Hawk and, I think Hawk and Dove might be a part of it. I'm curious to see, you know, if maybe Cyborg makes a cameo. Obviously, Cyborg is busy with the Justice League, but there's no reason why you can't get him to come by and say hello to his old buddies, hopefully, at some point. Whether or not this happens, again, we've got to wait until the app launches.
All right, man. So I got to pick your brain for one last thing. What games are coming out in August that people should look out for?
There's a few. Obviously, if you're a sports fan, Madden is launching earlier than it ever has. It's launching on August the 10th. So if you're a football fan, check out Madden. Still got the new DLC for South Park, where they basically do their homage, we'll say, to horror movies and introduce a new class of powers to that character. So if you've been sticking with that game and playing the DLC. A game I'm really looking forward to comes out next week. It's called We Happy Few. It kind of reminds me a bit of BioShock in terms of the world and the way people react with you, deal with you. You play a character, this world full of people who are constantly happy, and they take their happy pills, and it keeps them happy, and they wear these masks where they're always smiling. It makes them always smile. And you're the character who kind of breaks away from that norm, who says, I'm not going to put my mask on. I'm not going to take my happy pills. What's going on in this world? You have to figure it out and hopefully find a better way to where you can find true happiness, not found through some sort of psychedelic artificial means. So it's an interesting game. I played it at PAX a couple years ago. It's a lot of fun, a lot of interactivity. If you like the BioShock game, this might be something you want to take a look at. I don't think it's going to have as much combat or whatnot, but it's going to be a very interactive world that's really going to be focused on story and narrative and getting to the bottom of this really interesting mystery. It's also by Compulsion Games. They were just recently acquired by Microsoft and making this an Xbox One exclusive, Xbox One PC. But I tell you, if you have an Xbox One, I think this is a must pick up. It's a great way to kind of start closing out the summer. So keep an eye out for We Happy Few coming out next week.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can always follow me on Twitter at Ray Carcillo, Instagram Ray Carcillo, Facebook raycarcillo.voice. Those are always the best ways to keep in touch. And then just keep an eye out. Just follow me on social media and you'll hopefully see some more projects that I'm working on in the future I can't talk about right now at the moment.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.